everyone, Kelsey Little here, bringing you another episode of True Stories of Good People, a podcast brought to you by GoFundMe. In each episode, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives or has had their life changed by someone kind. And a lot of times it goes both ways. Imagine being a six-year-old kid, but all you can do is sit around in a hospital room because you're sick. You can't go outside and play, you're hooked up to scary machines. All you can do is maybe read, play some games. And then one day, you see the door to your room opening, and it's not a nurse, but Spider-Man. Can you even imagine the joy and the excitement? And not only is he there, but he comes over to talk to you and give you a hug, and he has a present for you? Suddenly, just for a moment, maybe you forget you're in the hospital. What an incredible gift. And this is exactly the type of joy my guest today spends his free time spreading to kids in need. I present to you the man behind the mask, Ricky Mena. All right, Ricky, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today and share your story.
No problem.
So firstly, I'd love for you to share a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you live, what fills your days, stuff like that.
Well, my name is Ricky Mena, and I've lived in Pittsburgh, California most of my life. Not a lot of people know that Pittsburgh exists. Every time I say Pittsburgh, it's like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Right.
But no, it's Pittsburgh, California. We're about an hour outside of San Francisco. I moved to Pittsburgh when I was 9. So I've been there most of my life, went to high school there, played sports my whole life. So like that's mainly what people kind of knew me for a long time. And then I was a musician and all that. So I dipped into music and that was a big part of my life and writing and speaking and all that kind of stuff.
Haven't you put out something like 8 albums, I feel like I read?
Yeah, it was 8 albums, but like I put out 8 official albums, but I had 9 albums worth of work.
Wow.
So there was one that didn't get released.
That's a lot.
Where I just released everything for free.
Nice.
You know, on my website, so my personal website.
I was actually listening to some of it this morning. You have a really beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you. Like singing voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe was that some of the older stuff?
No, that's like my singing voice is something that like I used to try to sing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was always good at rap, but like singing was not my original talent.
Really?
And my mom used to literally be like, okay, maybe you should just stick to rapping. You know how moms are, they like try to, you know, not break your heart, but tell you the truth at the same time. So like my mom was brutally honest and was just like, maybe you should just rap.
I think you're a great singer.
So I used to sing in the shower all the time. And then I sounded really good in the shower, you know, but then the acoustics are different.
Like, yes, showers are magical that way.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so I just worked on it and then it got better over time.
Cool. Now, the amazing thing about you, other than being an awesome musician and rapper, a lot of people already know, but for those who don't, Ricky spends his free time dressing up as Spider-Man and visiting schools and hospitals to visit kids who are in need of some extra happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot more to the story than meets the eye. I read an incredible anecdote from you about how you came to this idea in the first place. Would you be able to share that story?
Yeah. So I was at a low point in my life. I moved back from Philly after a love interest that didn't work out. And I found myself on the couch at a friend's house, 29 years old, almost 30, like literally like a month away from my 30th birthday. And after a long career in the music industry, I realized that it wasn't what I wanted to do as far as like a career. And that's something that's hard to deal with or face once you're faced with it, because you spent your whole life going after it.
Right.
So like once you kind of like get in the industry and you realize that your morals and your character, like who you are, is different than that, and that's not what you want to do, it's like, well, who am I now?
Yeah.
And so like I moved out to Philly for love. That didn't work out. And then I came back and literally had nothing as far as like what I was going to do. No girlfriend, no love, no like a group of friends that could fit in my hand and all that, which is all you need. But at the time it was just like, wow, like everything got stripped from me, it felt like. And then, you know, then I went into the personal training thing because I was trying to motivate myself. So the one thing I did every day was I was down on my last $300 and I got a gym membership. So I went and got a gym membership and then was going to the gym every morning. And then I said, you know, I could do this. So I got certified eventually. And then I was like training people, but I could, it was just like not for me. I still felt like what's, you know, what? There's got to be something bigger in the universe for me, because I felt this like that way since I was a kid.
Wow.
And so something was pulling me, and I just had to have faith that it would come. And that was the first time in my life that I felt like that, because I always had something, whether it was sports or music. And then when this happened, it was kind of like, I'm just waiting for the first time for something to hit me.
Yeah.
And then it did. I fell asleep on my friend's couch, which is where I lived, out of a bag. And I had a dream that my grandmother, who had already passed away months before, came to me, put on this movie projector, and this huge movie of Spider-Man went in the sky, and he was visiting all these kids in this hospital, and like thousands of kids in this like over-exaggerated gigantic room, and he was visiting all these children, and he was putting smiles on their faces and swinging around. He actually had webs and stuff, which I'm jealous of, but just the smiles on their faces is what I remember about the dream like the most. And I remember looking at her and go, that's cool, but what's that have to do with me? And she said, that is you.
Wow.
And when you wake up, that's what you're supposed to do. And I literally like woke up at that moment and felt like it wasn't even a dream at all. I felt like it was a memory. Like I still feel that to this day.
Wow.
Like it feels like a life memory when I talk about it. But I woke up, I'm on the couch, my friends are at work, you know, and I'm struggling with money. I probably had like maybe $500 in my pocket at that time. And so I just, out of curiosity, was looking up Spider-Man suits because of the dream. And I've never dressed up before in my life. Like, again, I'm almost 30 years old. And so I look up suits, and they're super expensive for the good ones.
Oh, yeah.
The Party City ones were not the ones I wanted to look at. and so I don't know. You know, it just, the curiosity spawned from that point. And so I looked up suits, and the story unfolded there. I'm sure you maybe have questions about that. Yeah.
So eventually you got a suit.
Eventually I got a suit. So a lot of people don't know this backstory, because now I've buried so much of my beginning because of what I've done so much work.
I know.
In the last 3.5 years, that the beginning and the little things that made this story special were buried. And it's like, no one knows what, you know, it's crazy how that works. You know what I mean? It's just got buried. So, but the one thing I had to do, the only thing I owned from my music career was a Chrysler 300 dub edition, like Chrysler 300, all, you know, everything was all the bells and whistles. And so like that was the only thing I had to my name at all. And I remember looking at the suit, which was like $1,400 for the first one. Yeah. For a movie quality suit. And only having $500 in the bank, and my friends are like, you know, feeding me and like not asking me to pay rent, and they have a daughter of their own at the house. And so I'm just like feeling like kind of bad, like, you know. So I sold my car.
Wow.
Like I sold my car probably 2 days after that dream. And after consulting with my friends, and they said, man, if there's anyone that could do it, it's you. But the thing that's funny is, I think back now in hindsight, is that they didn't, when they said, if anyone could do it, it's you, it wasn't like I was telling them that I wanted to turn this into a nonprofit organization.
Right.
It wasn't like I was saying I wanted to like eventually like sustain a life from this, like as far as financially, nothing. They literally were just, out of the kindness of their heart, just like me, were saying, if anyone can be Spider-Man for kids, it's you. And it wasn't about money. It wasn't. And so, actually, I had to go like and do something very scary, like sell my car and let go of a piece of my lifestyle that I thought I cared about. You know, like I cared about how people looked at me. You know, I cared about how I dressed and what I drove in. I sold that car, and 2 days after I sold it, I got a Honda. You know, so my Chrysler's car was named Christine.
Aww.
After that old school horror movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it was red.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. So and now my Honda's named Baby Mama.
Oh.
So I don't have a baby mama, but that's my baby mama. But I just, you know, I projected she was going to give me some problems, but she didn't. So
that's
the car.
Awesome. Nice.
But like, it's just crazy how that works. Cause like I let that go, and literally I cried when I sold the car. And after crying, I was like, why am I crying?
Well, it meant a lot to you.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a token of like where I had gone, where my progression in music had gone. And it was like the last thing I had, like the trophy, you know, that I had from that life. And so I worked hard to get it and pay it off in like 2 years. And it was like almost a $50,000 car.
Wow.
To me, you know, where I'm from, that's a lot. And so To let it go was hard, and then to like feel like I was downgrading to a Honda. But the moment that I drove in the Honda and was driving, and I had this greater mission in mind. And now, keep in mind, the suit didn't come for like, I ordered it in June, and it didn't come until like right before October.
Whoa.
So it took a while. So you know, it just took a minute for it to get there. And so I had a lot of time to think. And so, but well, you know, I went back and forth, like maybe I'm crazy. I am crazy to no, I'm not, like God wants you to do this, you know, like feel validated in it. And I felt like I was like, almost like in a movie. Like that's how it felt. I felt like I was in a movie and like, you know, like there's this greater purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle, I'm in the beginning stages of it right now. Like I literally was aware of that. And, so I just kept that mind frame while I was driving the Honda. And actually after a while, like I realized that, and then especially when I started visiting kids and I still have the Honda, that's what I pulled up here in today. but like when I was visiting, when I started visiting kids and I got the suit and the mission came, became real, it was like the car didn't even make me feel as good and as rich as I did when I was in the Honda now because of my mission and what I was doing yeah. with my life. And not how I was looking in life. You know what I mean?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, so how did you go about setting up your very first hospital visit? And do you remember what that was like?
The first visit was for this little boy. I refer to him as Child One. And now I've seen over 10,000 kids to date.
That's incredible.
Around the world. Yeah. So so he's Child One. And so Child One, his name's Jeremiah. And so his godmom is someone I trained.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't put it on social media what I was doing at all for like the first 2 months after I got the suit. So even building up to that, I didn't put it on social media. So the only people that knew about it were like maybe one or two people outside of my friends who said, yeah, let's do this. And so she was like, oh my God, it's going to be so amazing. You know, like, wow, like that's so cool. And she really believed in me. And she even said, I have a godson who's been in the hospital for like almost a whole year.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, well, I want to meet him. So I finally get the suit and everything. And I'm like, okay, let's set it up. And he is such a big Spider-Man fan. Let me just tell you, like the kid freaking wore a costume every day. You know what I mean? And refused to take it off, like his Spider-Man costume. And he had Spider-Man everything. So he just... Like he didn't know about it. His mom didn't tell him that we were going to surprise him. So she goes, are you coming or what? And I'm like, well, they're not letting me come in. Like, I can't just be like, you know, I can't just come in as Spider-Man.
Right.
You know, they'll escort me out. And she was like, you know what? And she literally asked me a question that I think about all the time. She goes, Ricky, I understand your hesitance, but my son, you know, has been in the hospital a long time and I want to ask you something. And I said, sure. She said, do you work for the hospital or do you work for God?
Wow.
And that was really like a life-changing moment right there for me as far as like how I attacked and envisioned this whole thing. And so I said, I work for God. And she goes, great. So she's like, come in with the backpack, with the suit in the backpack, like Peter Parker does, and then get dressed across the hall.
Oh, that's even more like Spider-Man.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And so I get dressed across the hall. We did it. I had like, I can't even call it a volunteer. She was just like a friend. And so she came with me. And so to hold like a couple toys, I had like a bag of toys, like not even toys, like stickers. That's what we started with. Stickers, paper masks, like totally stuff you buy at the dollar store, yeah. You know what I mean? And so I just wanted to bring something for him to keep. And then so, yeah, I got dressed across the hall and shimmied into his room so no one knew. And I was in there for an hour before security came in and pretty much escorted me out into another room. But which is funny that I was in there for an hour because when I do one-on-one visits now, whether it's at home or wherever it's at, it's an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, and I realized that first time, like, there were so many things I realized in that first time that an hour is long enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because after an hour, kids are kind of like, okay, the magic's gone. Yeah. Spider-Man's here. So, mom, I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like, you know, and those things become more important than Spider-Man sitting there. So I don't want the magic to fade away. So I kind of like 45 minutes to an hour mm-hmm. is you want to leave on a high note. Because me, in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to see this child again. We build relationships with kids. It's not just like I go in and that's it. Bye, see ya. And right. That's the only time they get to meet me and see me.
That's so cool.
And so, yeah. But another thing, you know, that I figured out my first time with Jeremiah, Child One, at Oakland Children's while I was doing it illegally was that I was meant to do this. The look on his face, the look on his mom's face. I watched the reaction of everyone in the room, not just him. And that's an advantage of being Spider-Man, because I can have my face straight and kind of like look over here to the right and see what's going on without letting anyone know that I'm looking at them. But I noticed his mom was like crying. Oh, the godmom that did this whole, that connected all this, she was crying. She had a Canon camera and was taking all these high quality pictures. I wasn't prepared. Like, I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I didn't even plan to put it on social media. Next thing you know, we leave. Before we leave, we were brought into this other room, and this director, I'm not going to say names, but she had the security guard escort me into this small room, kind of like this one here, a small room. And she was like, take your mask off. You know, who are you? And like, I said, Spider-Man. No, I literally said, and she was so like PO'd, you know what I mean? She was so upset because I was like, I crossed my arms and I was like, I'm Peter Parker. And she was like, no, like, who are you really, like, under the suit? I said, I just told you I'm Peter Parker. And she was so upset. And this big, tall guy, the security guy, was behind her laughing. Like, thought it was funny, right? Because, like, wow, this guy's a savage, you know what I mean? He came in here and did something for kids. Like, that's like Robin Hood type stuff.
Yeah.
And so she was like, just have him change and, you know, and escort him out. You know, make sure he changes out of the suit first. And then so we leave, and then I'm on the road going back home, and I get all these text messages, and it's the pictures that the godmom is now sending me that of the Spider-Man visit, and I literally was so moved by the pictures, because when you're in the moment, it's hard to soak in what's really going on. You're in the zone. You're not like really thinking of. You're just Spider-Man. You're not like, you know, thinking of everything that's going on, really. I mean, you notice a few things, but you don't really like go through it until you're gone.
Yeah.
And so like, I'm driving on the road and I'm thinking about, oh man, I was just on this natural high. And I'm like, that was so amazing. I know I'm supposed to do this with my life. And you know, the friend at the time was like, oh my God, that was amazing. And so next thing you know, I'm getting all these, then the pictures come in, and I literally had to pull over on the side of the freeway right before I got to the tunnels in Oakland, because I cried. Because of his face. And when I was in the behind the mask at that time, I was wearing I put Rain-X on the inside of the lenses so it doesn't fog up. And at that time I didn't learn that yet. So like, I was like, I could barely see him, you know, so I could see him, but I couldn't see him. And so I saw the pictures for the first time, and I just saw his smile like in all clarity, and I started crying. And it was pretty crazy, because on the side of the road, I text my mom with one of the main pictures that actually became like the main picture on our GoFundMe, and like the main picture, the first picture of our whole mission, which was me like kind of over his shoulder and him like smiling. And so I sent that to my mom, and my mom's mom is the one that came to me in a dream. And she said, and I had no idea what she was like, you know, that she was about to tell me this, but she said, she called me. She didn't respond in a text. And she goes, oh my God. And she was crying. And she was like, that's so amazing, Ricky. I'm so proud of you. And she was like, do you know what today is? And I said, no, what's today? And she goes, today is a year since your grandmother passed away the day. And it's not like we planned that to happen.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, I mean, it was an emotional, you know, thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I drove home that after that first visit, and it was just, I shared with my friends and everything. And then even after 2 months after that, I didn't share it on Instagram or anything like that, or Facebook or anything. And I didn't have a GoFundMe, none of that. And so it was just crazy how it started, you know? And I said, okay, I got to get some toys. Like, I got to get some better toys. And then we got like a small pile of toys in the corner of my bedroom and all that. And it literally has, I mean, where it has gone has just been ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you've visited, from that first time, you visited now 10,000 kids.
Yeah, over 10,000 kids.
What do you talk about when you go to visit them, especially in these like hour-long meetings?
Now, when I go to one-on-one visits, those are like hour-long meetings, potentially hour-long meetings. It just depends on how the kids react. Because what I offer the service I offer now is, I realize, is a therapy. And it's a cool, like, superhero therapy. But the main thing that I want to get across, there's no structure to what I do, But there's a loose, I guess there's a loose blueprint of what happens, because you don't want to go in with a script and like you do the same thing with every child.
Right.
It's kind of like Bruce Lee said, you know, like Bruce Lee's philosophy was be like water. And so like if you pour water on stairs, the water becomes the stairs. If you pour water, if you pour water to crash, it'll crash. If you pour water to flow like smoothly, it'll flow smoothly. So it's the same thing like with this. Every room is different. Now, when I go into the hospital, it's not an hour long. Right. It's like literally not even 5 minutes. It's like I get 2 minutes with every kid.
Oh, wow. Super fast.
Yeah, because sometimes it's like 45 kids, 30 kids.
All at once?
No, room to room.
Oh, my gosh.
And so you're going room to room. And so it's like pretty nerve-wracking. It's hard because you don't know what you're going to expect in every room. Every family's going through something different. Like you could walk in one room and it's a pediatric cancer patient who just found out. Then you could walk in the next room of a pediatric cancer patient whose parents just found out they're not going to live. Oh then you gosh. Can go in the next room and it could be a little girl who like, you know, got a rash from, you know what I mean? From the new detergent, you know what I mean?
Just anything.
Yeah. I got a cold or something. So it's like, you never know what you're going to come across, you know?
That's true.
But I go in there with the same frame of thought. Kids, regardless of what they're going through, whether it's cancer or like a rash or a cold, that's what's amazing about kids is that to them, there's no level. To them, it's just the hospital. It sucks. Period. And so like for me, it's like that's kind of like makes it easier to talk to kids because they don't understand like the severity of the situation. They just know what they don't like and what they do like. And so like they do like heroes and they do like princesses and they do like all that kind of stuff because they're tapped into their imagination. They don't have to try. It's the way they think. It's the way we used to think.
Yeah.
And so they're very in tune with who they are and what they want. And so when I go into rooms, I just tap into that. I tap into my inner child and I'm able to, I want to be like free flowing and funny. And my friends call it punny. So I'm like, I have all these puns, like, you know, and I'm very witty. So that helps. Yeah. So there's one where I stumbled upon this on accident. I was in the room and the kid was like, he's not Spider-Man. You know, he's not the real Spider-Man. He looks like it. He sounds like him, but he can't be the real. And I said, you want to feel my muscles? And so he felt my muscles and he was like, oh. And I was like, yeah. And when I leave the gym, I'm usually a little Thor. And he didn't get it, but like his parents did. Like, you know what I mean?
That's really good.
And I was like, whoa, like I thought of that. And so I use that now. You know what I mean? If I'm having trouble making a kid laugh, yeah. I'll throw that in there.
Oh, that's a great one.
Or like, you know, it's stupid stuff. Like, it's just fun stuff. Like, you know, when you're taking a picture and then I'll be like, oh, we got to take that picture. And with all sincerity, you have to say it though. Like, oh, we have to take the picture again. I blinked. And they're looking at me as Spider-Man like, you blinked?
Yeah.
Or I say, I promise I'm smiling. You know what I mean? Because I could be like this, but, you know, with a straight face behind the thing. But it's just all about, like, having fun, like, no matter what the situation is.
Are there any particularly memorable moments from your visits that you would be able to share? Some specific kid that really just touched your heart?
I mean, there's so many that it's hard to, like, single out.
Yeah, how do you pick out of 10,000, I guess?
Yeah, no, there's so many. I mean, I have so many stories, but I mean, there's a couple kids that I guess I would talk about. The one child I guess I would talk about is because the only reason I'm going to bring him up is because, and he's very hard to talk about for me. And so, like, I guess if I stumbled in my words, excuse me, but Daryl Akins, he became like a brother to me outside the suit. And the reason why I want to talk about him is because when I first met him, I heard so much about him before I even met him. And I always missed him at Oakland Kaiser. I always missed him. And they were like, wait till you meet this kid. And I'm like, so the day comes where he's like, Daryl's here. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I can't wait to meet this kid, right? And so I'm like, okay, so how old is he? Is he 5? Is he 4? And they're like, he's 16.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, wait a second. He doesn't believe in Spider-Man already. And I was like, I already was like, are you sure? Like, I was like, are you sure you want me to go in there? And they were like, no, you have to go. You have to go. So I was like, all right. And that's why I wanted to bring it up because, like, you can't judge what you think's going to happen. You can't do that because I never would have guessed, like, walking into this young man's life in that room that day, that it would change literally changed the both of our lives.
Wow.
Incredibly. Like, oh my gosh. I walk in the room and, you know, Daryl's family, they're all from like Oakland and stuff, and they're like 40 deep in the room. And so I go in there and, you know, he's sitting up playing PlayStation, and he looks up at me as Spider-Man and then looks straight back at the TV and starts playing. And I'm thinking, well, where's this amazing kid everyone was talking about? He like totally gave me the stink eye, like, oh, so what? Spider-Man's here. So I knew at that moment that it was, excuse me, I'm a too cool thing, you know? And I was like, okay. So I joked with his family a little bit. You know, the women in the room were kind of like, you know, I was wearing tights, you know what I mean? I'm wearing tights. So they were like, oh my God, Spider-Man looks good and everything like that, you know? And so he was getting embarrassed by that. And then I went to his bedside and I was like, look, you know, like, I know that you don't believe in Spider-Man. Like, I know that you know that Spider-Man's a fictional character. But what I need you to know is that the man underneath is not fictional. And that's why I'm standing here. And I was like, I don't know your story. All I know is what you're battling. And he was battling leukemia.
Oh my gosh.
And I said, you know, and he was 16 years old and he had to stop playing football and all these things that he loved doing. And he was being scouted and all that. So, you know, I didn't know that at the time, but I said, you know, I gave him my card and I said, look, my name's right there. If you wish to seek me on social media, go ahead and I'll be there. You know, I'll be there for you if you want to talk. 2 days later, literally, I get a message from Daryl on Facebook saying, hey, Spider. He didn't even call me Spidey. Hey, Spider, can I ask you a question? And I said, sure. And he said, when I beat this, can I join you in hospitals to do what you're doing for kids?
Oh, wow.
And I said, dress up as a character? And he put, yeah. And then I put, who? And he put, Deadpool.
Yes.
And I was like, yes, you can. Like, I was like, wow, I was just so blown away. I wrote a message back like, you know, like, no one's ever asked to do that. You know what I mean? Like, no one, I've met older kids before and like, no one's ever said that before. And so I was like, wow, what a perfect like candidate to do this. You know what they're going through.
Oh yeah.
Like, wow, how amazing would that be? And so, so from that moment, then he started messaging me like, hey, just saying, if you want to like come visit me anytime and hang out, just saying,
aww,
you know, you could if you want. And so I was like, okay, I'll come by there. So I was doing my Spider-Man thing and then I was going to see him. Well, that turned into 2 years of me visiting him after Spider-Man. Not only that, but I found out he lived like two exits away from me.
Oh, wow.
And then so I started going to his house and then I became like literally a part of his family. He went into remission, cancer, and then for his 18th birthday. And then he was so excited. We were like, I mean, we were planning to do this thing together. And then cancer came back and, you know, the rest of our lives changed when Daryl started going down. He was projected to only live 2 weeks. December 6th, they gave him 2 weeks left to live and he didn't die until July 2nd. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Daryl is like, you know, we became so close friends and brothers and I held him. His whole family surrounded me and him as I held him as he passed away. I literally held his head closer than this microphone is right now, looking in his eyes and comforting him as he transitioned to wherever we go after this. And so, and 2 weeks before that, to the day, I was holding Zamora Moon, a 9-year-old little girl, who transitioned. And that was the first time I saw a child die in front of me.
Oh my gosh, Ricky.
So 2 weeks later, you know, there's Daryl. And, you know, it's just, it's, I never thought my journey would take me there. But it did. And so, you know, I visit his grave and it's hard, but, you know, even like doing this was hard today, but I knew that I have a little picture of him in my car.
Aww.
And so it says all faith, no fear, because that's what he used to say. And I know for a fact that he'd be like, come on, man, like, don't be nervous. Like, what are you doing? You've done this. And so after he passed away, I got diagnosed with PTSD and I tried to run from it. I thought something physically was wrong with me. I had all this blood work done and all this stuff. And my doctor was literally like, he put his hand on my shoulder and was like, maybe it's mental. And I was like, wow. What? No, it can't be. This is impossible. I'm physically sick. And he's like, no. And so then I went to go see like a psychiatrist and stuff, and they were like, they confirmed, and I was diagnosed with PTSD and generalized anxiety disorder and social anxiety, which I've never experienced in my life. And so, you know, Daryl was a life-changing moment, and I know it sounds like a sad story, but it's really not, because like, I think we perceive death as sad on this planet because it's the unknown, you know, what we go into. But honestly, he touched so many lives in 18 years. He touched more lives than the average human being will in 90 years with his life and his fight.
I'm very, very sorry for your loss, that you lost a friend. But thank you. It's really beautiful that you guys found each other, and how lucky that you both were to have each other. That's amazing.
Yeah, there's so many little things with Daryl. Like, I gave him a chain that he wore and he still has on now, you know, and I prayed over him, and he asked to be carried like a warrior. When he knew he was going to pass away, he asked to be carried like a warrior on the shoulders of his brothers. So he had like the most pallbearers I've ever seen in my life. And I was one of them. And we all hoisted him. It was his football team. His high school football team.
Oh my God.
And they won the champion. Like the McClyman's High School in Oakland, like literally is probably the most under, like the financial situation over there is so bad. It's like the worst school probably, like they say, in California. They won the championship the first time ever, the first year he couldn't play.
Oh wow.
And they won again after he passed away. And they've been doing it for him. And it's so incredible. And those are the same guys that I helped hoist him, you know, on our shoulders. And it's just, you know, it's so symbolic, and it's so like moving, and it's so empowering, that those are the things that I think about. I try to think about when I'm having anxiety and I'm shutting down and I can't do this anymore and all this stuff. And I come to those walls. I think about all the people that you brought together and all the kids that these kids brought together, you know.
That's so powerful.
Yeah, it is very powerful.
So eventually, after doing this for a while, you started a GoFundMe campaign.
Right.
And a website, too, and a nonprofit, so you could keep this awesome thing going. How was it launching the campaign? When did you decide to do that?
So I did the GoFundMe first because, so I announced it on social media 2 months after I started. And the only reason I did... Well, I should say the only reason I didn't want to at first was because I didn't want people to assume that I was doing it for me, that I was trying to get fame, notoriety for it. And I felt like they would do that specifically with me because I was a musician who literally was like, the camera before, you know, taking pictures of my shirt off. And like, I had a different lifestyle. So like, you know, I was a ham in front of the camera, you know, so it's like, I knew that that would be it if I didn't like at least give it time. So that's what I did. But after a month in, I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to release it. This is something that I'm going to do for God and for the kids and all that. But then I realized that like, it was harder for me. Hospitals were still saying no. So I was visiting like special needs kids, you know, which I love those kids, man. Like they were the first like children that I really started meeting, like autistic children. Oh my gosh, you can learn so much from those kids, man. Oh, yeah. Like, seriously, it taught me to be patient, you know, and all this stuff. But like, I started visiting them, but like, I couldn't get into hospitals. So my friends, I came to them one day and I just had this vision, like literally like another one of those things, like where I was like, okay, like, I feel like God's telling me I need to announce this, even though I'm going to get some backlash. Like, it'll be okay in the long run.
Yeah.
And so my friends were like, hey, we got your back. You know what I mean? Like, we know why you do it. You know why you do it. God knows why you do it. Period. That's it.
It sounds like you have the most supportive friends ever.
I do. And so I was like, okay, let's do it. So I remember my first post ever on Instagram and Facebook was like a collage of a couple pictures. And I didn't have many pictures of me being Spider-Man with kids because at that time, like, we didn't really take pictures because what would I do with them? You know what I mean? And so we had a collage and I posted, and I had one with my mask off, and I said, what if all the caption said was, what if I told you I was Spider-Man for the last 2 months for, you know, children? And I went on all the children I see, children in need, basically, would you believe me? And that's all it said. And that one post, this is back when I had probably had like 5,000 followers on Instagram and Facebook, and which were the same people on both of those probably. And so I got like almost 800 likes on that.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, you know what I mean? I just was breaking the 100 like spectrum of like, you know, social media. And I was like, oh, I got 100 likes. And then all of a sudden this one, I got 800. And I was like, it didn't make me get big headed. It made me feel like there's an avenue for this.
Yeah, it's like a signal that there's an avenue for interested in this.
Yeah, there's an avenue for goodness in the world, like a bat signal in the sky. And so I was like, signal. Yeah. So I was like, but no one wants to see a big spider in the sky. I mean, let's just that's be honest. So I was like, wow. So then we started. So that changed the way we did things, right? Because now I want to take pictures in these visits. So we had to come up with like this photo release form and all this stuff. But again, I just started a GoFundMe because I was like, I want to bring more presents to the kids. Like I want action figures.
Oh, yeah.
And I was spending my own money. At that time, I was working nights at a bar in Pleasant Hill. So in the day, I'm like, you know, visiting kids in the hospital. At night, I'm punching people in the face, like, you know, who are drunk. like it's really like a weird contrast. And people would come up to me after like a fight would break out at the bar, and I'd have to be like ruthless to break it up. And they'd come up and be like, I love what you do as Spider-Man. And I'm just like, but you just saw me be a totally different person. This is not good. Like, I didn't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So I did that for the 2 years of my journey, my first 3 years. I was a bartender, or excuse me, a bar back and like security guard. And so I built the GoFundMe just to get toys and buy a new suit. And these needs started to come as time went on. And I realized, because when I bought the first suit, I thought to myself, like, I'm just going to buy one suit and this will be it. You know, I'm just going to, when this suit gets old, it'll taper off. It'll peter out. You know what I mean? No pun intended. Peter yeah. out.
You are punny.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's like, I thought it was just going to be over. So, but it wasn't. And I was like, wow. So there I am hitting the guy up again. Hey, like how much would a suit cost? You know, this suit cost. And he was like, well, you can get one like this that looks more comic booky and this and this and this and that. And the kids would probably love this. So he showed me a picture and I was like, how much for that? He said, man, if you keep coming to me, I'll drop the price every time. So let's do it for 800.
What?
So 800. Then I got suits for 500. Now I'm getting suits for three.
That's amazing.
Then I'm getting suits for 200. You know, because literally this, his Spider Nation is the company name that makes my suits. But he literally was just doing them for me and a couple other people. Now he left his real job to do this.
Oh my gosh.
Because of the light that I was putting on it and then like how big my thing was blowing up. And I was like, Spider Nation's doing it. But yeah, so GoFundMe was the first thing I started. And so I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, you put up a GoFundMe. I had an okay following on social media. And then money started coming in, you know, 20 here, 100 here, you know, this and that. And I was like, wow, okay, cool. I could buy this child like, you know, this gigantic stuffed animal. And so then when we were doing one-on-one visits, things started changing because of money. Because of GoFundMe, like things started changing in such a positive way that I was able to structure things. I was able to have my friend Kristen, who was like my right-hand person in Heart of a Hero, before Heart of a Hero. She was one of the friends that, you know, my friend Michael and Kristen, they were a married couple that I lived with. I've known Michael since I was 9. And Kristen, they've been married for like, I want to say like 15 years now, maybe 14. But anyways, she was like so supportive. He was so supportive. And so I was able to tell her like, hey, you know, like when you message the, because she was doing all the messaging for me. Right. So I was like, okay, you handle, I wanted to feel important. So like, I'm just the talent. I just want to show up. Right. Like, I just want to show up wearing the tights and be there for kids and like worry about that, focus on that. And she loved clerical work. So it was like, it worked. So like, she would call the moms and be like, so what's your child like? Like, what do they like? You know what I mean? Like toy wise. So now because of GoFundMe, we're able to do that.
That's so cool.
And now that's actually something that's been that's what we do. Like, yeah. You know, what is your child like? What are their interests? Do they like Paw Patrol? Do they like princesses? Do they like Spider-Man? What do they like? And now I bring a whole backpack filled with whatever they like.
That's so cool.
And even that, not even that, but like their siblings get stuff too, because when a child's battling something, the whole family's battling something.
That's true.
And then another child could feel neglected because the child with cancer is getting all the praise and the attention. So we don't let anybody get swept under the rug.
That's so thoughtful.
Yeah. And so we made the GoFundMe and the money started coming in.
How much has it raised by now?
Now that GoFundMe has been up longer than Heart of a Hero has been around. So that's what people have to remember. That money is gone, basically.
Right.
That's
but the I thing mean, that over GoFundMe. Time.
Yeah, 61. I think it's 61,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. When it's, we started getting money, I was like looking at my friend Kristen like, okay, like, you know, I'm from the hood. So we start worrying about the IRS and stuff. I don't want to, you know, I don't want them to come and shut this down. You know what I mean? And I didn't know what their power was. So I'm like, okay, we should sign up for like to do a nonprofit. And so my barber at the time knew this guy named Willie. Rest in peace. He passed away too. But he was like so knowledgeable that I paid him extra money to just like sit down. I could have paid him money to just do it and do all the paperwork. But I was like, can I pay you extra money for you to explain this to me? Because one day I'm not going to be able to be Spider-Man, but I want to be the best CEO. I want to know the ins and outs of my company. I want to know how it's ran, how it's supposed to be ran. And I want to know this. I didn't go to college. You know, I graduated from Pittsburgh High School, barely graduated, you know, like not because I wasn't smart, but because my interest level for school just sucked. And so, but yeah, so, you know, this guy Willie like gamed me up on that, gave me all this info. And, you know, he taught me everything and I literally, it took so long to get it. And so when we did that, we started claiming all the money that we got, like every penny. We have to claim everything, every receipt is kept. And we started doing our taxes. And so once we got the 501c3, like nonprofit, and it wasn't pending and it's actually there. Yeah. I mean, it was such a monumental moment.
Yeah, that's huge.
I mean, we waited because there was like a fumble in the paperwork on their end. So literally it delayed us another 7 months. Oh my so gosh. Like literally it was almost like, I want to say a year and a half for Heart of a Hero to get their 501c3.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that affected us greatly because we had celebrities. We had like people who were donating $20, $100, even $500. Some people even $1,000 weren't really like concerned with the receipt. But people that wanted to donate $20,000 were like, you know what I mean? And not on GoFundMe. Like, you know what I mean? Like people wanted to privately donate like $20,000. They were like, well, this is a write-off. Like, sure. You know what I mean? That's like a car.
That's a lot,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, and so we had to, like, when it came in, I was just literally like jumping for joy, crying because this meant we're now more structured. We had to create a board and all that. But yeah, I mean, you know, as you could tell from my story, the necessity came with time. It's just like all this unfolded on its own. And that's what I love about what I do and what I created for the world to know, being Heart of a Hero, because like it just literally unfolded like naturally. We didn't try. And it's funny because like I remember there being like other options. And I hate saying that for like to raise money, like money platforms to raise money.
Sure, yeah.
But after looking at them, it really wasn't an option. Like GoFundMe was like the easiest thing. And so it was like, oh, it goes into the account, you know, every night, you know, at 12. Yeah. It just will go there and I check it. It's there like clockwork, you know, and it's so easy. But what's really cool about this whole thing that over time, so I started building, obviously, steam with like who I was, why I was doing it, Heart of a Hero. It started getting out. We were on every major news, like across the country. I went to Florida and was on Telemundo for Christ's sakes. Like we did everything. And so what that did for us is it gave me a platform of over 73,000 followers on my personal page, X amount of followers on Heart of a Hero's pages. You know, we have over like, I want to say probably combined, I want to say probably over like 150,000, maybe 130,000 followers combined. Wow. Right. And so, what that does is when I meet these kids, now I'm able to do posts about them because families are like, yes, come meet my child, please inspire them. And then tell the world what we're going through. Because it's like, we're on an island and the world needs to know, especially pediatric cancer patients.
Wow.
And so what do they have? They have a GoFundMe. I cannot dip into my bank. We're not doing well enough for me to give grants to children, which one day I want to do. But right now, I can utilize my resources and I can do a post and paint it so poetically with the way I write and with the pictures that are taken and combine those two things and grab the hearts of people, not with anything that's sugar-coated or smoke-screened or anything, but something that's real and raw and it has to do with kids. And then after that story that's gripped you, there's their GoFundMe link, and you can donate directly to that child.
It's incredible.
Yes. And they always use GoFundMe too. And it's like, it's interesting how that came about.
So on that same note, what is your plan for the future of Heart of a Hero? Where do you see it in 5 years?
5 years, most definitely, I see other spider men and women dressing up. I already have people interested in Houston, people interested in Florida, people interested in Canada, in the UK, to dress up as Spider-Man under Heart of a Hero.
Well, so, all over the world, though.
Yeah. And so already, I'm already ready to go. And the only reason I haven't put that into motion yet is because it's important to me to know them better. And, you know, background checks, obviously, because they're dealing with children. But they're going to utilize our resources. So basically, they would get into the hospital with our resources that I've already done all the legwork. You know, they don't have to go through the red tape I did. And so they'll already be okay to go in because of our reputation. And then when they do, I mean, they won't even have to do half of the work that I did. Like, they're going to get new suits sent to them when theirs are getting ratty. And they're going to have toys and coloring books and bubbles and whatever they need sent to them. And whatever they need to do these fundraisers, tables, chairs, all that, you know, like canopies, all that, banners. It's going to be real. That's what's going to happen. And they're going to go and they're going to take Heart of a Hero and they're going to become like the branch of Heart of a Hero out there. And that's
so awesome.
So that's in the near future. That's not even 5 years. That's like maybe in like the next year. You know what I mean? And then so in 5 years, what I really want to do, I want to get to a point where we're actually having you know, at a facility somewhere, we're training people on the science of visiting kids, and we're actually training more people to dress up who are interested. And then there'll be like a fitness program involved and like program. So it's like a wellness of life, like well-rounded like type of thing, to where I can kind of like be a life coach in that, because that's truly my passion, is to help people, like all people. So like with my experiences especially. So like that's where I see it being. And then also being able to give families grants, like to show up as Spider-Man, bring toys, but also like, we've already done it once where I sent a whole family to Disneyland.
Really?
Yeah. So I sent this little boy named Ruben to Disneyland, and if he has a family of five, and he had a terminal form of brain cancer at the time. And it was his last trip. And so I sent his whole family to Disneyland, and they were so happy because that's the last videos and pictures they have of him walking, laughing, talking, and he's gone now. And so that's the thing that I want to do more often.
Because
yeah. And so Make-A-Wish can't get to every child.
That's true.
Not to say anything against Make-A-Wish. I love Make-A-Wish. They're so huge, but it's like, you know, they can only do, when you get that big, it's hard to see everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I want to see the people they're not seeing. And I don't even aspire to be as big as them in that realm. I just want to be able to help out with that and give grants and like give parents like money to pay rent, you know, and stuff like that. Because that's why Ronald McDonald houses exist. Not a lot of people know, but you know, there's the guy who created Ronald McDonald created it because he saw people sleeping in their cars, parents sleeping in their cars. Yeah. And he found out they sold their houses to pay for bills for their kids.
It's so horrible.
It's crazy. It's a crazy world we live in.
Well, to close, I would like to leave everyone with this. Ricky, as someone who is so amazing at following their dreams, literally, yeah. What advice would you give to others who are sort of looking for their passion in life or are looking for a way to make a difference, kind of like this incredible thing that you've done?
Yeah. I would say that don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. This world is going to tell you, since we're little, ever since we were kids, we've been groomed to do, like, obviously go to school, do all these things, get a job, 9 to 5, go to college, do this. Listen, if you want to do those things, that's great. But if your passion doesn't align with that, don't be afraid to go after it, because there's no right way to live. You have to tap into what makes you happy and try to do that. Don't think about the money. Obviously, it's an important thing. If you can get a side job and do what you love, that's how it starts. But don't be afraid to put in extra work. It's going to be hard, but you got to put in extra work. Don't be afraid to follow your dreams. You don't even need one fan in the stands, because God's always with you. And if you're your own biggest fan, that's all you need in the beginning. And trust me, if you follow your heart, everything else will follow too.
I just think it's so incredible to meet people who are willing to spend their free time giving back to others, because life can already feel so overwhelming sometimes, just having to take care of ourselves. But the fact that Ricky feels compelled to spread joy to children who need it, it's just the most inspiring thing. I'm so happy you all got to hear his story today, and you can learn more about Ricky and support his wonderful mission at heartofahero.org. And thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a podcast brought to you by GoFundMe. For more information on this episode, head over to gofundme.com/podcast. If you've been inspired by any of the stories you've heard here, please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@gofundme.com. And lastly, for more True Stories of Good People content, you can follow us on Instagram at True Stories of Good People and on Twitter at TSGPPod. We'll be back next time with more True Stories of Good People. Talk to you then!